This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
Our goal is to compete and really put a fun team on the court that really gets after it.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
We're very talented. I mean, when we go out there and compete at a high level and give a lot of effort, we can be a good team.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked on Rockets, another NBA draft prospect preview episode of Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every single day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. And you'll get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and partner at Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked on Rockets, as well as at Apollo HOU. And joining us, as he has done a few times now, for excellent draft coverage, a credentialed draft insider, Richard Stamen of the Locked on NBA Draft Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Mavs Draft. What's up, Richard? How's it going, man?
Hey, how's it going? I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, this is gonna be a fun episode. We're talking Jonathan Kuminga, and this is so we're kind of is it safe to say, Richard, that we're kind of moving after, you know, discussing the top three kind of guys in this draft with Cade, Mobley, and Suggs. Now that we're kind of out of that tier of player, are we kind of moving into the tiers that are less so like franchise transforming type players and more so just, you know, moving into guys that are, you know, have chances to be really strong pieces, but not necessarily like franchise altering talents? Is that safe to say?
I actually think that the two G League guys who are pretty much considered right next to each other on most boards, I actually think that those two both do have franchise changing potential. It's just a question of if they'll reach that franchise changing potential.
All right. Well, good. That's as good a place to start as any. And it's got me a little bit more hype for Kuminga, although I think you and I discussed this before hitting the record button, but you know, I guess you're a little bit more high on Kuminga than you are Green, right?
Yeah, I have Kuminga at 4 and Jalen Green 6, which I am fully aware is a hot take. Not intentional, not trying to be like, you know, that hot take guy, but yeah, I'm very intrigued by the upside of Kuminga.
Whoa, okay, Jalen Green at 6. Who do you have at 5?
I'm all in on James Booknight. I will gladly come on the show whenever you've got the James Booknight episode.
All right, well, we will definitely have you, but we're going to stick with Kuminga right now for this one. So let's go ahead and get some of the entry stuff out of the way. So he's, you know, 6'8", 220, with a ridiculous, you know, really strong 7-foot wingspan. And he, you know, he's marketed as the best, most versatile defender in this draft. And so I guess that's as, you know, good a spot to start as any, is just kind of talking about some of his pros and defense above all else with him, right? That's what he's kind of bringing to the table for a team that's looking at him.
Yeah. So the calling card for Kuminga would be, you know, first of all, strong defender. And then also that jumbo playmaker who I fully buy his slashing. That's really why he's number 4. I think that's far and away his greatest offensive strength. And I think he's outstanding at it. But being that two-way slasher, it's just really high upside to me.
We're going to get into some of the specifics on his offense and defense because I do have some concerns offensively, as well as wondering what his fit is ultimately going to look like on an NBA team, I guess, positionally. But let's start. You have him pegged as number 4, but what's his entire, you know, his true range to you? Like, so you've got him kind of around 4, but give us the top end and the low end of where you see him falling in this draft.
Yeah, so I think his very best case scenario is he's in that mix for number 3 with Suggs, Green, and himself. I think that's where his absolute high-end outcome is. I don't really see a way he slips past 6 or 7, depending on the teams, unless they're that concerned about the jump shot.
Okay, and what are some examples? You know, you kind of have him, you know, you say he might be in the mix for number 3. Like, off the top of your head, what are the teams that, you know, say so-and-so team lands at 3? What are some of the teams that you see taking him at 3, and which are some of the teams you see potentially moving on from him, you know, and going Suggs instead at 3?
Yeah, so I think you could go make the argument really that Minnesota, if they're not going to take a true, like, his I feel like if they're not taking a true point guard, they're probably not going to go guard in the draft at the top. So I don't know if Suggs would be a guy because he's in, like, he would be their third combo guard because they already have Anthony Edwards and D'Lo. Then you look at Cleveland, who has Sexton and Darius Garland.
Shout out. Hang on. We got to shout out Sexland on this podcast.
Yeah.
Just for Evan and Chris, we got to shout out the Sexland on the Locked On Rockets pod. I love it.
Yeah, all the way here for it. So I think even though they have Isaac Okoro, it would be kind of weird fit, but I think Kuminga can play a little bit more up than Okoro can. So they could be in the mix. And then Orlando, you know, they have recently acquired a lot of guards, Markel Fultz, RJ Hampton, Cole Anthony. And I feel like I'm very disappointed in myself as Magic draft as missing out on who the fourth guy might be. But yeah, I think that Orlando could really use him. And those are three teams that are very much in the mix for the number three pick.
Give me your thoughts really quick, because we're on a Rockets podcast. Let's pretend for a second Cade and Mobley are both off the board and the Rockets are picking number three. As the outsider looking in, where would you see the Rockets going?
I think you start with Jalen Suggs. I think he's perfect next to Kevin Porter Jr. I think they really I think Suggs complements Kevin Porter a little bit more than the opposite, but I think they do work together very well.
I like the idea of the fit between a backcourt of KPJ and Suggs. And I still think, especially after we talked previously about just how unique Evan Mobley is, I think I'm still kind of in the same boat with you as ranking Evan Mobley above Suggs in this draft, whereas before I kind of had them as almost like 1A, 1B. So I think I'd still, if they went number two overall, I think I'd still want to see them go Mobley, but I like that idea, and I'm behind the Suggs pick. But we got to get back to Kuminga because he's the guy we're talking about right now. And this is the spot where, before we dive into the nitty-gritty on his offense and defensive sides, let's talk about his comps. And because I have a comp in mind after, you know, watching, you know, some highlight videos and going back and reviewing some of the games, and just I have this idea of a comp, and I want to see if you think I'm completely out of left field with this, but I got to hear your comp first.
Yeah, so I hate what I'm about to do because it's such a low-hanging comparison. But I really do, and they're a little bit different because, like I said, Kuminga plays up more than this guy does. But it starts with Jaylen Brown. I think especially how you look at them out of college, like say that this was Kuminga's stat line and that he had gone to college. 14.5 points per game, five rebounds, two assists. Maybe you up the assist to like 3 or 3.5, something like that. And then that was on 29% from three and 65% from the line. Is that pretty much in line with how you would view Kuminga based on the archetype I told you?
More or less. I can see that.
Not like one-to-one necessarily, but a lot of shades of it.
Yeah.
That's how I view him. I don't know if I trust the shooting to get there as much as Jaylen Brown's has, but I think him being able to play up and be a four in some lineups kind of trades off that value.
So I can get behind that. And I think that he does have the size advantage compared to a Jaylen Brown right here, where Brown's, you know, 6'5" and is definitely more in that, you know, smaller wing category than necessarily like a true like combo guard. And so I think Kuminga's definitely got that to his advantage, but, and you can totally put me on blast if you think this is way out of pocket, but watching the film on him, I was getting shades, at least offensively, and then obviously what he brings to the defensive side of the table, I was getting shades of Kawhi Leonard. Is that a stretch? Like, I mean...
I wouldn't go there.
Okay,
I'm
that's
also
fair.
Very reluctant to put guys near All-Star, really border... I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I'm very reluctant to also put guys near that category, especially someone with his bust ability. Spoiler alert, I actually thought you were going to say Jimmy Butler. Because that's another guy he has similar, I think less basketball IQ, but similar game too.
Okay. And, part of it might be influenced by the fact that, like, I think about him as that guy, you know, obviously being able to defend kind of 1 through 4 and, you know, what he brings defensively. But then offensively, from what I had seen out of him, and this was just very reminiscent to me, you know, every other offensive highlight that I saw, it felt like he's got a really comfortable, like almost back to the basket kind of game, sort of, like especially against a smaller player. And I just kind of felt I was getting shades of Kawhi-esque from that. So like, that's all, that's kind of where I was going from that. But he definitely doesn't have the outside game that Kawhi has, but also Kawhi kind of had to polish that up over time. So.
Yeah. I mean, the shooting Kawhi has made strides in. I'm still just, I don't know. The form doesn't necessarily freak me out on Kuminga, but it's definitely an area of improvement.
All right, well, we're going to dive into the specifics on the offense and the defensive side here in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, NBA playoffs are right around the corner, and you can track all of that action and more at BetOnline. You're going to get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs. That means MLB, NBA, NHL, UFC, you name it, they've got it. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline and use promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft on Twitter, one of the local experts, one of the Locked On in-house draft experts. And we're going to kind of break down Kuminga's offensive and defensive side. And I think because the defense is kind of what he's, you know, billed as, we're going to start offense first and maybe get the less exciting side out of the way, although he's still got a lot of talent on that side. And you know, you talked at the top, Richard, about kind of his ability to playmake from that position, and it does seem like he's very comfortable with the ball in his hands and either slashing and kind of, you know, attacking off the bounce for himself, but also kind of these little, like, you know, nifty pocket passes here and there. Like, he kind of sees the floor well, I guess, but not necessarily like a guard, like from the top of the key surveying the entire court, but just as he's making his moves, he's got these, like, he's comfortable with these array of passes to create for his teammates. So you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. And kind of going off what you had said earlier with the comparison, I should clarify because it'll help answer that a little bit. You know, you said Kawhi as a comparison, and for me, I thought you meant production, which is why I was very reluctant to say yes, but in terms of play style, they are very similar. And the way that they just initiate offense and are able to be like that secondary guy. I think overall, like, he's one of the more unique guys because simply he's 6'7", 6'8", and can run the offense. Like, he can ISO guys with ease. He looks like a guard. He has the handles of a guard when he's taking guys one-on-one, and he's still brand new to basketball. That area can only go up.
He's definitely got, like, in your eyes, right, he's definitely got a very much NBA-ready body, like, ready to go right now. There's not really much concern about him getting bullied by, you know, guys who are, you know, who have been in the league for longer and who have had time to work their bodies up to the level that they need him to. He looks like he's ready to go at the NBA level right now.
Yeah, physically at the very least. Like, I mean, I'm all in on his slashing, like I said. That's the big reason why I'm just so high on him. His footwork on drives is just incredible. I actually tweeted this, I think it was like on Tuesday or Monday, how his footwork on drives is, like, on the post spins, excuse me, on driving spins is unprecedented for someone his age and his experience playing basketball. Like, that's only going to get better as he masters a Euro step, things like that. His driving moves will just really elevate his scoring ability. And then also his playmaking too, because he'll be able to drive and kick. Like, he already did that a little bit in the bubble.
The idea of, like, a front court that's loaded with, like, Kuminga and Jae'Sean Tate, two, like, uber slashing, great playmaking kind of forwards, like, the idea of those two guys sharing a lineup together is interesting from one perspective, and also terrifying from another perspective, because the one area of Jae'Sean Tate's game that he really needs to clean up is his outside shooting. And the exact same thing can be said for Kuminga. Shot just 16 of 65 from behind the 3-point line in the G League, and that's good enough for 25%, which, like, how much concern should be placed on his outside shooting?
Yeah, so again, I'm a little bit skeptical on his shooting. The touch looks promising because he gets a clean follow through every single shot. You don't see any weird mechanical flaws in, like, and on his fingertips at the release. But it's, for me, it's the fact that his shot is just so long that he can't really master his touch, and it doesn't negate how long his form is. Again, it's not like a mechanical, I don't know how to describe it. It's not like something that's broken. It's just something that I don't know how you overcome something like that. And again, maybe he can make up for it being a slasher. Like, if he's shooting 35, excuse me, like, from three, you're probably able to live with it. And it might just be something that comes with experience and reps. So I don't know how to diagnose this shot because it doesn't look like bad. It's just long, and that's probably easy to fix. There's probably a solution for it.
Is there a worry, though, that, you know, if he can't fix that shot, you know, obviously he's got skills, you know, as a slasher, the playmaking is kind of there, the finishing around the rim. He looks really good with both hands, honestly, around the rim. Like, he's got a good touch. But is there a concern that if he can't get that three-point shot to a reliable level, that it'll be super easy for NBA-level defenses to game plan against him and just kind of sag off of him, force him into those tough threes, or, you know, run essentially a zone against him so that he's almost neutralized in what he is good at?
Yeah, I think that more applies to the playoffs than a regular season game. So to an extent, I'm not that worried about something like that because I think he will take them. He will make defenses pay at times. Like, he'll get hot, kind of like how LaMelo Ball was treated when he started this year. You know, he was shooting anything and teams were like, okay, like the perception pre-draft was he can't shoot. And then he started shooting and he started making it. So it might be something like that where he forces you to guard him and that throws off everything.
Okay. Now, kind of changing pace to the other side of the basketball defensively. So he's, you know, marketed, billed as a very versatile defender. So I guess the first area that I want to clarify really quick, is he more effective as an on-ball defender, or does he, you know, is he more effective as an off-ball defender? Because there's definitely defenders who, you know, thrive in one role versus the other. And then you get those really unique ones that are, you know, the top tier, you know, all NBA caliber defenders who can thrive in both roles.
Yeah, to be quite honest, that's a really tough question that I don't have a confident answer on. I would lean on ball because we saw more of that in the G League. The reason I say I'm not confident in leaning either way, the G League pretends to look like sometimes there's one-on-one defense, but it stops at one-on-one. There's no such concept. There's no team defense. That's not a concept in the G League. So it's really hard to say how his defense actually is, but given his frame, athleticism, and recovery ability, I really think he'll be a good on-ball defender. If I had to guess, he'd probably have some mental lapses. He's just so raw, just given the tools. He's probably going to be negative off-ball, positive on-ball, is how I would guess it.
Okay. And how are the overall defensive instincts, you know, from a guy that size with all the tools, you know, what is his reaction time? Does he, you know, recover on, you know, even if he gets beat on the initial drive? Like, how are the defensive instincts there?
Yeah, so he recovers incredibly well. He can probably get crossed up and still make it back up on his feet and get near the shot. It's very rare for people to do things like that. You know, I look at like Paul George when he defends one-on-one, his recovery ability is insane. And Kuminga's isn't that far off from that level of recovery. So I'm very high on that. The overall instincts and being able to read like a screen and things like that, still a little bit lacking. I think that kind of speaks to how raw he is more than anything, more than like a, will he get there? But I would give him the benefit of the doubt in those areas just because of his physical tools.
Okay. And then kind of, I guess the other area defensively, is there maybe a standout like game or possession maybe, or just, you know, something that jumps to the forefront of your mind where you're thinking that really, cause I mean, like, I think to Jae'Sean Tate, who's obviously going through his rookie campaign this season and has had a mountain of standout possessions, where he's looked really, really phenomenal. And I think some of the most impressive defensive stops that I've seen him make are the ones where he, you know, reads the driver, you know, the player attacking, and reads the drive so perfectly that he's able to tangle up the basketball as they're like elevating to attack the rim. And he's had a handful of those this season. He had one on Anthony Edwards. He's had a few, you know, a handful of them throughout this NBA season. So is there a standout like play that Kuminga had where you like really kind of locked in and realized, oh, like he's going to be something special defensively?
I think it might've been the first game of the Ignite season, but again, there wasn't a ton of defensive highlights really for most players in the G League. I mean, again, it's like you try for like a couple dribbles and then pretty much if they beat you, there's not much help defense. There's not much, you know, rotate to the next guy. And like, it's very light. So there really isn't any play that stands out for me and nothing overall. Again, the G League just makes it really hard to evaluate his defensive upside.
So then we're kind of evaluating based on like his, you know, physical attributes, how he looks. Is there a possibility then that he doesn't, like, his defense doesn't translate at the next level because it might have looked either A, a little fluffed up in the G League, or you know, maybe just the NBA speed is a bit too much for him? Are there concerns on that end based on kind of what you've been saying about the G League not necessarily holding up that side?
Honestly, I think it's an effort and athleticism thing. That's usually, like, when I look at defense, I think effort and athleticism matter a ton, or IQ. You have to have one of, you have to have two of the three mostly. And I think effort has to be the common denominator. But so for me, it's like, I'm banking on that athleticism and motor to be there. You know, sometimes he did have moments of being disinterested on defense, but I mean, you could say that about literally every single G League player. So I'm banking on just those physical tools and the effort being consistent and getting only better. And that's why I would project him as a positive defender in the NBA.
All right. Well, coming up, we're going to get to, of course, the bustability stat, as well as the floor, the ceiling, the best case, worst case scenario for Jonathan Kuminga. And of course, we've got to wrap the thing up with a tankathon spin. We'll get there after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Protein bars, right? You either love them or you hate them. It's time, if you've never loved a protein bar, it's time for you to check out Built Bar. They are the best protein bars on the market. And I'm not just saying that just to say that. They are legitimately so good. It was so refreshing. I was just, you know, like, you know, messing around, browsing Twitter the other day, and I saw a genuine conversation between a couple guys talking to another host on this very Locked On network, talking about how damn good Built Bars are. And it's because they legitimately are the best protein bars I've ever personally tried. Coconut Brownie Chunk, my favorite. You cannot go wrong with it. So many great flavors on their menu. Coconut Almond, Raspberry, Mint Chocolate Brownie, Salted Caramel. I mean, just seriously, you really can't go wrong with a single bar on their menu. They're low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. And you can check them out. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your very next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, breaking down Jonathan Kuminga with Richard Stayman at Mavs Draft on Twitter. Now, Richard, let's start, and we're going to start like worst case scenario. What is the floor for Jonathan Kuminga? Are we like, I mean, give me, throw out some names that you've got in your mind as to like, but like, I mean, how are we scraping the bottom of the barrel here? If the shot doesn't pan out, if the defense doesn't translate to the NBA level, what are we looking at, man?
Yeah, I don't have a name. I mean, a just general phrase. I mean, you're looking at out of the league in like 5-6 years. Like his floor is really low.
Oh man, that's slightly terrifying. I am suddenly much less interested in Jonathan Kuminga, but okay. All right, that's totally fair. And I think that there's definitely some warranted concerns based on what we've talked about. And there's a lot of potential there though, which on the flip side, where do you see his ceiling? Like as if things progress the way that they need to, he kind of gets the outside shot picking up a little bit. How are you feeling about his ceiling in the NBA?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll give a vague outline of it. Pretty much I would bank on him being a 20 points per game guy with good defense. It's an all-star player. The upside is absolutely ridiculous. Someone as raw as him with the physical tools, the skill set of being able to be a semi-ball handler and a slasher with the potential to grow as a jump shooter, that's a coveted position as a wing. You know, that's kind of the most important spot for superstardom in the NBA.
Yeah, and you talk about a guy who, you know, has all the tools, has the right, you know, the makings of somebody who could be a phenomenal two-way player in the NBA and kind of slot in as somebody who maybe not necessarily needs, you know, all these offensive touches, but somebody who can slot in as, I guess, right, kind of like the second or third option on a team further down the line and just kind of show up, you know, grab his lunch pail, does the dirty work defensively, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a little bit more alpha than that kind of role gets the perception for. But yes, like generally something like that.
Okay. And I guess then based on everything that we've kind of discussed and, you know, your perception of him so far, what is the most where do you have him pegged as ultimately developing? Like, we're going to look back on this conversation 5 years from now and we're like, okay, he kind of, he you know, trended towards the middle ground of those two options. So he's not out of the league yet, but maybe he hasn't completely turned into, you know, a perennial all-NBA caliber defender, great two-way guy. Like, where's his middle ground at?
Honestly, I feel like his middle ground is like a player that fluctuates every year of his perception. And then this isn't a comparison of players, but like, you know how Andrew Wiggins, like for the first 3 years, we're like, okay, yeah, this guy could be good. You know, you bought the scoring upside and things like that. And then a couple years after that, you're like, all right, this guy's just empty stats. Like he's overrated. You know, the scoring doesn't actually tell his impact, anything like that. And now you look at him where you're like, hey, he's actually kind of useful on Golden State in the role he's in. He's kind of played that 3-4 to an extent. You could kind of look at him the way we look at Wiggins. That's probably a middle ground, I think. I think that's a fair middle ground for him. Does that sound too high or too low?
No, I feel like that kind of sounds right on the money. And I'm like kind of smiling as I say this because I was just reading the other day, somebody was trying to find like a proper comp for Andrew Wiggins and how his career is likely going to progress or just the perception of him. And somebody threw out the name Jeff Green. And this doesn't have to do anything with like play styles, but just how their careers have kind of progressed, where Jeff Green was finally like accepted, like never quite lived up to what his hype was supposed to be, but kind of just over the past few years has just been really accepted for what he does bring to the table, the skill set that he does provide. And I think you're kind of seeing that change, that perception with Andrew Wiggins a little bit. So maybe like, you know, Jeff Green was the first, then Wiggins was the next, and now Kuminga might be the next guy where it's like, maybe he never quite lives up to how highly he was, or, you know, the top of his billing, right? But as people start to just accept what he is good at and accept him for the role and the services that he does provide, then they'll find a finer appreciation for him. Maybe that's a good comp. I don't know. How do you feel about that one, Richard?
Yeah, the generational mid-tier player, like the generational average guy. No, actually, it's funny you say Jeff Green because he's someone who I have seen a lot of name drops for in comparisons, because especially as Jeff Green's career has progressed, he played a lot more power forward. Even this year, like a few games ago, he started at center for Brooklyn, in which, again, like I said, Kuminga is going to play up. Jeff Green isn't a horrible comparison. I think that's just a very low comparison. I don't know how realistic it is, but I do agree something like that is very possible, where he just becomes that average player where you don't really have an opinion on one way or the other.
All right, that's fair, which I guess that leads us right into the awaited stat, the stat that you mentioned at the top of this show, which I love. I love that bustability is catching on. Please pass that around in your NBA draft circles. But Richard, let's get to Jonathan Kuminga's bustability score. So a quick refresher on bustability: the lower the number, the less likely it is for a player to be a bust. So just as a reminder, Cade Cunningham was a 1 on the bustability scale. So where are you going to throw Jonathan Kuminga on this scale, Richard?
I'm about to go where no draft analyst has ever gone before. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
I'm going to go 5.5. I think there's a very good chance that, like, if you, you know, 10 times you ran a Kuminga scenario where he goes to the NBA, I think it'd be a lean more times than not. He hits that basement more than he hits the ceiling. But for me, I'm taking the chance of defying the odds, and his upside is just too hard to resist. Like I said, that 6'8", 6'7" wing that can play up as a combo forward, potentially shoot, defend, and slash, that's all the makings of a modern superstar. You look around the league of what every team needs, that's it. So I think you take the chance. You have to make it a calculated risk, but I mean, there's a very good chance if he hits that he's one of the top names in the league.
I feel like, I appreciate you for jumping out there and going with our first high scale bustability candidate with the 5.5 on the scale. That's going to be a good one. Aggregators, please have a field day with this one. But legit, shout out Don Knock. Have fun with this one, buddy. But loyal listener of the show. But so I guess in a way, does the calculus change at all if those top three guys are already off the board, right? Because I feel like this has that potential for, if he really is that high in your eyes as potentially being, you know, turning out to be a bust, hitting that basement, then is there really is it really worth it for a team to take that risk and go with him at, say, number three over a guy like Suggs, who you feel much, much more confident in as far as not turning into a bust?
Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of depends on the team, again. But I was actually talking about this with someone earlier on Locker Room. You know, big boards don't make sense. I have him fourth on my board, but Jalen Green sixth. And kind of spoiler alert, because I know we'll talk about Jalen Green at some point, I hope. But Jalen Green, I would probably draft before Kuminga, but I would rank Kuminga higher just because of his upside. I really think that I wouldn't take him three. I wouldn't take him three over Suggs. I think the top three 100% should be those guys, Cade, Mobley, and Suggs. But if you can afford the swing, like say Golden State gets somehow, they miss the playoffs and they get the Minnesota pick at four, you already have another pick in the lottery. Take the swing. Absolutely take the swing.
So let's pretend for a second, in the worst of worst case scenarios, that the Rockets lose their pick to OKC and OKC walks away with the number five pick and, say, you know, a top four pick as well. Is that another team that you'd be all for? Like, hey, take the swing on Kuminga because you've absolutely got a chance already with a top guy and, you know, you're taking another swing at number five. Like, if Kuminga's there, you're absolutely for it, right?
Yeah, that's 100% a better scenario. I went in and talked about this with Rylan on Locked On Thunder. But the Thunder are in this crazy scenario where they could really start getting stars. And imagine if Kuminga hits, not only do you have either an elite trade piece or a really good core piece to package along with their unreal amount of assets, it's an unbelievably high payoff if you can feel like you can develop him. And I would honestly believe in OKC. I'm saying all the wrong things on this podcast for you, but I do believe in OKC more than any other team to develop him at the top.
I love that we're just like passing you around the Locked On Network and you're just like, you're over there with Rylan hanging out, then you jump on here and you're like, oh damn, I'm not supposed to say that on this one. Cause like, no, I mean, hey, well, you know, at the end of the day, we bring you on because of your expertise, because of your insight, your knowledge. That's exactly what you're here for. That's what you're good at. I appreciate you taking the time to be here. And that, Richard, that brings us to the most important part of the show. We got to spin the wheel, man.
Oh God, I'm scared.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. We're simming the lottery. Where do we land? Oh, we got Cade Cunningham! Yes! All right, Rockets walk away. I think this is the first number one overall sim that I've done that I've landed like mid-recording. That's amazing. That was a genuine reaction. Oh, that feels so good. All right, so the Rockets land number one overall in this sim. Thank the heavens. We got Detroit locking in at number two. Cleveland jumps up one spot to number three. The Toronto Raptors jump up a few spots and lock in at number four. And the Minnesota pick falls all the way to number five, which becomes the Golden State Warriors pick. And then just for fun, OKC drops one spot to number six. So let's go ahead, because I want to give you five slots, because I'm Rafael Stone in this scenario, and Stone Cold, I'm drafting Cade Cunningham. So I'll let you run through the rest of the next five picks in a row. So we got Detroit and Cleveland first, two and three.
Yeah, let me just preface this with the fact that this is going to age like milk. I can already tell this is far and away my nightmare scenario for multiple reasons. So who is number? I think Detroit, it doesn't
Detroit,
matter.
Detroit's
Evan
number
Mobley's
two.
Going number two. Evan
right.
Mobley's going number two.
All right. Cool.
Cleveland. I hate this.
You can't take Suggs because they've already. This is great. So they've got to go Kuminga three, right? You really?
I think you actually still take Suggs. I think Sexton's in a contract here. Who knows what they do? That's an impossible one. Let the talent figure it out. They clearly don't care about how many guards they draft. Take the talent.
Hey, you know what this means? It just means that they're going to have Suggs for a year, and then they're going to trade him to the Rockets for a top 55 protected second rounder next season. So, like, I'm all for it, because then we'll have Suggs and Cade and KPJ. It's going to be lit. It's great. Like, you know, awesome. So Toronto, number four, Mobley, Cade, and Suggs are all off the board.
So I think from there you go Jalen Green. Like I said, I would draft Jalen Green before Kuminga, excuse me, even though I have them oppositely flipped on my big board. So Jalen Green, number four. And then who is number five?
Five is Golden State via Minnesota.
Yeah. They should learn from last year, not just go for fit. Swing for the fences. Absolutely. Swing for the fences. Take Kuminga at five.
All right. That brings us shout out to our boy Rylan over at the Locked On Thunder podcast. That brings us to OKC at number six.
Man, that's hard. I'm going to give you
Orlando at number seven too, since you are at Mavs draft and at Magic draft. So like, we're going to give you that one too.
So I'll rig it for Orlando to get the better player. Got it. No, I would take, honestly, this is about to be a really weird take because I don't like it, but it works with what they do. And I think at six, I think this guy does have some star upside. I don't know how much his ceiling is compared. I like his floor. I don't know about his ceiling, but Moses Moody at six is someone who I just see as a two-way wing. His shot and defense will 100% translate. And then at seven, I would go Booknight. Booknight was the other guy I was thinking with OKC. And obviously, you know, Booknight is my fifth ranked player, but yeah. So that's a hard one.
Okay. And then, well, and you also have number eight by way of Chicago. So congrats on that one too.
Oh, brilliant. So you want me just to
go for Keon it. Why Johnson? Not? Why not? There you go. Yeah. Have fun with Keon. Have fun with Keon Johnson and Booknight. There you go. So, I mean, like, is that like, I know it wasn't exactly your perfect scenario, but you know, you walk away with a little like consolation prize sort of.
Yeah. It's an okay one. They could trade up.
All right, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Richard. Thank you. You are no longer are you bad luck on this podcast, because this was the very first and probably going to be the only, right? Like, I used up all the Rockets good juju on this like make-believe podcast doing a mock of everything, and now they're not going to get the number one overall pick. But hey, Cade Cunningham was nice for the all of like 3.5 minutes that he lasted. But Richard, thank you so much for being on here, man. Why don't you let everybody know where to track you down at?
Yeah, you can find me at Mavs Draft, Locked On NBA Draft. I host the Tuesday show, and then mapsdraft.com is where I post big board scouting reports and mock drafts.
Awesome. And yeah, definitely want to check out Locked On NBA Draft. As always, I'm going to post the links underneath this episode. But Richard, thanks again for taking the time to be here, man.
Appreciate it.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that episode, our fourth breakdown of some of the top prospects in this year's NBA draft. Hopefully you enjoyed my genuine excitement in the fact that the Rockets came away with the number one overall pick and landed Cade Cunningham. How exciting would that be if that actually came to fruition? But for today's episode, that is going to do it. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.